Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, and we have a recurring guest because he is absolutely taking over Wisconsin, and that's like an absolute understatement. The real man, the myth, the legend, Logan Rankin. Last time Logan was on the podcast, he had a measly 700 units, and today he's at 1,100 with probably 400 under contract, maybe 800 by the end of this podcast. Welcome to the show, Logan. How's it going?
It's going great, man. I really appreciate it. Yeah, and it's been a lot of fun. 230 under contract. So,
well, give it a podcast. We'll see what happens. Maybe the operations you've built, maybe a couple hundred more hits. So,
exactly.
But Logan, I think we were talking before. Obviously, if you haven't listened to the last podcast, what are you doing with your life? Listen to the first Logan Rankin podcast on the RAND CRE Show, because he dove in very technical, but very well on the ops. But today we're going to talk about managing something else, and that is debt. So Logan, before the show, we're talking about managing debt. What have you kind of seen, and what has your been strategy with managing debt?
Yeah, I think that's such a good question. And I love operations, and we talk a lot about, and it's very, very important, especially coming out of COVID. And obviously a lot of that's not over yet. So definitely, like, if you are investing in real estate, whether you're managing yourself or you are hiring out management, or even if you're a passive and syndicating deals, you need to understand the operations and how to manage the real estate, or at least how to hold the managers accountable. So very, very important. But what we didn't touch on, to your point, and what I want to make sure people also understand, is you manage the real estate because you have debt on the real estate, or you should have debt. It's
I see you chirping at Dave Ramsey on the internet. I see you.
Yeah, exactly. That guy, him and some other financial, to preach to live debt free right now is such, it's crazy. It's honestly crazy. Living debt free or not, all debt, bad debt, like things that Dave says, it's preaching things where people don't understand financial literacy or how to build wealth. I mean, especially right now, like how can you possibly not realize that debt is a huge wealth building tool with the likes of inflation? I mean, in 1971, when the dollar became debt, to not realize what's going on, I mean, you got to educate yourself in this. In fact, I would go as far to say that I got into real estate, not because I love real estate, because I love that real estate is the best investment tool that allows you to take on the most debt. So it's really about managing debt before it's even about managing the real estate itself. And more now than ever, when I have the opportunity, and I've obviously been able to grow pretty quickly here, you know, while I have the operations and the management behind me to be able to grow quickly and start to scale, it took a while before I was able to scale. But now when I have the opportunity to buy real estate, I'm taking on as much debt as possible. Obviously, as long as the real estate still cash flows and it's financially responsible. But I mean, it's crazy not to utilize debt to your advantage when you have facts like inflation being 4.2% in April. Like that's most of what I've been doing. I would argue I've been spending at least half my time managing my debt portfolio than actually managing the real estate right now. I mean, most of my debt, I have well over $100 million in real estate, and I got a ton of debt that comes along with it. And most of my real estate portfolio is between 3 to 3.5%. And, you know, I like to lock in at 10, and I like to make sure that's assumable. Now, some of it's recourse, some of it's non-recourse, but like at the end of the day, you can lock in at a 3% rate when you have inflation at a 4.2%. What does that mean, Mike?
Money.
I mean, it's crazy. And that's not, I mean, we're just talking about inflation. That's not talking about, like, I mean, everybody pays so much attention to cash flow. I mean, right now you should be paying attention to tax flow. I mean, if you put all this debt on your real estate and it still can cash flow, I mean, the tax code is written, as you well are well aware of, Mike. Like, you have debt, you can write off just about everything. So there's so many different advantages right now to have debt on your real estate. And I'm a big component and of buying as much real estate as you can to not only hedge inflation, hedge taxes, but you can build a lot of wealth because of where the rates are right now too.
I can tell you're fired up because you're like, I have four thoughts in one and I want to say them all, but that's exactly. I think there's a lot to unpack in the sense of going as much debt as possible, but then caveating it with being responsible with it. So what are some metrics that you use to make sure you're not over-levered? Because I think the novice investor would say, oh, I don't want to, I'm afraid because we're at the peak, we're at this. But how do you combat that or make sure you're being responsible with it?
Yeah, I'll share a few, and I'm going to do it both ways. I'll share how to not over leverage yourself and be smart with it. And then I'll also tell you most real estate investors don't have a barometer of like when you're under leveraged, right? And I think you got to pay attention to both. So let me answer your question. So, I mean, obviously, first of all, the biggest rule of thumb is like, make sure you're at least what the bank is looking for. And a typical bank DSCR, they're looking for a 1.25 to a 1.30. So you want to be at least at that. I would tell you most times when I buy a property and I try to leverage as much as I can, I'm probably at a 1.45 plus. So I put a little bit more on what that looks like. My overall portfolio is actually at a 1.7. So, while I want to take on as much debt as possible, it's very important to not over leverage yourself. And here's the part that you got to understand. So I've bought deals, $4, $5, $10 million deals where I've put very little of my own money, 0 to 5%, right? But they're heavy value adds. I have a management company. I have 8 years worth of repositioning experience where I'm very confident to be able to take that very little of my own money in, my bank trust me, and rather quickly reposition the property to where the LTV is much lower and there's a lot more equity in it that I put into it, right? But then there's other deals where, I'm putting in 20% and there's not as, especially in this market, I can't remember the last deal I bought on market. Most of my off-market deals, even those, sometimes you have to put in 20% because there's not as much. So I hate when people say like you over-leverage yourself because you put 0% down or you put 5% down. That's not the metrics that you should be looking at. What you should be looking at is what does the DSCR look like? How quickly can you move up rents or reposition the property? Does it cash flow on day one? Like, you can't just look at how much an investor is putting into. You have to look at all the variables. When you're looking at just one variable, it won't help you with how to manage that debt load. So those are some of the things I look at. And then I would tell you, typically, this is just a rule of thumb. You want to be really careful not to under leverage yourself because, I would say 60 to 70% of my properties are value add. And we try to do, I call it speed repositioning, where it might take somebody 36 months to reposition. We're trying to do it in 12 to 14. So it's really, when you grab a big value add apartment and you want to reposition that quickly, one of the things that you want to pay attention to is how quickly that property starts to cash flow. Because obviously, one of the things that you want to pay attention to is there's only so much you can write off. So the good news is you can make your property super profitable. The bad news is even after cost seg for a while, when you're cash flowing as much as a property could potentially cash flow, you're going to end up starting to pay taxes on that. And it's smarter to then refinance that property, pull that money back out, put it into another property that needs to be repositioned, which means you're adding capital expenditures to it, more write-offs, et cetera. So typically I tell investors that like, once you get up to after all costs, right, all operating expenses and debt service, like somewhere between the $200 to $300 a door, it's going to be super hard not to pay any taxes. So once you get up to that range, like you-
What's really the $200 to $300, like profit per unit?
Yeah, $200 to $300 a door. So yeah, so if you start cash flowing that, that's just, it seems to work out from an equation standpoint to- After you run all your numbers, like it's going to be really hard to avoid taxes, not paying taxes. And obviously, if you have to pay taxes because your property's that profitable, you know, that's fine. But there's much better uses for your money. And that's obviously taking it back out and putting it into another property. So you got to pay attention to that, especially if you're repositioning it. And I think a lot of investors don't do that. In fact, a lot of them brag about it, Mike. Like, you know, it's one thing to worry about not being over leveraged, but the fact that you don't worry about making your money as productive as possible is just as bad. So I know guys that are bragging about, you know, cash flowing $1,000 a door. That's crazy. That's not smart. You're not being smart with your money.
I love Logan. Your mission is to literally debunk Instagram of like, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Maximize debt. Don't make too much money on your profit per unit. Just speed repositionings. And I think I know how numbers oriented you are, but I think everyone else who's listening for the first time is like, how the hell does he know all these numbers? No one knows, but behind his computer is Logan has just an entire ticker board of every number that's coming in that's tied to his Appfolio. So don't be alarmed.
Right behind my computer, I got my Scotch bar, but same thing.
that's what he calls the scoreboard. But no, that's great. I think that's how do you reposition so quickly? Because I think when you have residents and, you know, I could be a limiting belief, but for us, the repositioning is one piece that I think people underwrite too aggressively. And then when it comes to actuality, it's much slower. You having your management company, I'm sure, is a huge component of it, having your just dream team crush it out and get through it. But how does that work on the 12 to 14 month turnaround?
Yeah. And I love this question because I believe two ways to add the most value or to truly scale is not just understanding operations and managing, right? It's your question, how do you reposition a property as quick as possible? And I even put something on Instagram the other day, it's amazing to me, before I answer this question, the amount of investors that don't invest in their properties. And I think it leaves so much opportunity for people like me. And in Wisconsin, where I mostly have my properties, I would tell you that, you know, we found a really nice niche. And I think the niche is honestly can be in a lot of areas across the United States where, this will tell you why I want to reposition so quickly. And I'll get into that in a second. But if you think about it, with labor cost, with material cost, building before and especially building now, it's really hard to build something that isn't $2,000 to $5,000 a unit, right? It looks great, but you have to charge a very high level of rent to make the numbers work. And I predict, and pretty easy to predict, that's only going to continue to rise. And then you got all this inventory, right? Built in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, maybe even, that the person either built it or that has owned it and hasn't invested a lot on it. Maybe this is the typical shag carpet, you know, the orange or green or whatever.
But Smurf blue.
Yeah. And the rents are very, very low. And what we have found is that if you can stick, somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000 a unit, let's just say our medium flips are usually somewhere around five. So we're talking about luxury vinyl plank. We're talking about paint. We're talking about maybe an appliance package, vanity mirror. Not all that much. We're not changing the cabinets. But if you can increase rent, typically for us, about $150. So 150 times 12 is $1,800. 1,800 divided by the 5,000 is a 36% ROI. I mean, where right now in this market, where do you buy a property with a 36% ROI? And this is why, I think it's so important. And I'll talk about repositioning. If so many investors are frustrated with not being able to find a deal, and they're sitting on 100 units, let's just say, where there's 36% ROIs all over the place, but they don't want to spend that money. And I would just tell you, just run the numbers. The same way you underwrite a deal, you can actually underwrite a repositioning or a renovation. So I love that, because I think what I try to do is take these 1970s to 2000s and push them into 2021. And I would tell you, obviously there's a huge affordable housing crisis coming, and it has been coming for a while. I mean, we're significantly under housed right now across the United States. And I think people will pay the $150 to $250 more for a place they're proud of. but there's just not that inventory. So they either have to pay the $2,000 to $5,000, or they're stuck with the, you know, shitty 1970 unit that is cheap, but there's no middle ground. I mean, there is, but there's not enough. And yeah. I think that's my niche and why I want to reposition so quickly. So repositioning and how we do it quickly. This is like a whole class.
Logan Selby, he's like, are we green lighting? Are we going to this for 45? before we go into that, I want to just pause it real quick. You have the team, the operational know-how, and are very deep in the market. I don't want a listener out there who's like, all right, I'm kind of in it. I know it. Let me buy this heavy value add, and I'm going to crush it. Yeah. Because you will get crushed. You will get obliterated if you don't have your team stacked. And I tell people, even on the underwriting, go, do you have a property? Like, I've learned in the 2+ years in multifamily, you can underwrite to anything you want. But if you don't have the team to execute that plan, your underwriting is useless. And so now my evolution and questions used to be heavily in the numbers, but now it's who's going to do it? And bad answers include, oh, I have a single family guy who's done it. And I'm like, you don't have the team. Oh, I have a property manager who does a quadplex. You don't have the right team to do apartments. So it's making sure, because those team members help stack the deck and making sure your numbers are correct. And they're also in the market enough. So they're just surrounding yourself. So I don't want you to, a lot of listeners would be like, I'm just going to do the heaviest value add to get 36% because Logan said so. Logan has a dedicated team of rock stars, all stars that are not leaving. And he knows the market like the back of his hand. So network with property managers and contractors.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, Mike. And because it's the whole who, not how right now, right? I mean, it's if you go and buy a heavy value, that's such a good point. If you go and buy that and you don't know who's going to actually do it, or you have, and I would tell you, right, most repositionings for 99% of investors, they take longer and they cost more. And so I think they have this, you know, if you think you can find a decent 1099 contractor out there, a licensed contractor, do the rehab for you and to do it in a timetable that you think is reasonable. Nowhere. Like that's
paying $40 an hour.
Yeah. It's really difficult to be able to do that. So I love that. You should have the team lined up. The team should be vetted. And I think honestly, it's a big competitive advantage right now. Like if you don't have the team, it's much better to buy something that is already, you know, and I did like my first 100+ units. I was joking with Mike. It took me 3 years to buy 7 units. Okay. That's slow. I didn't have the team. I didn't understand real estate. I didn't understand the things that I understand now. And then, you know, all the way through probably 100, I didn't really do value add. I bought some value add property, sure, but like they were nowhere near what I'm doing now. But what I would tell you is I would tell you that if labor is only going to get tighter. In fact, like I just read this thing like 3 years ago, when you posted a job, you had 6 unemployed people that would apply. So it was a 1 in 6, right? Right now it's a 1.1 to 1. I mean, you're not hiring somebody that doesn't have a job. You got to hire somebody that already has a job. So and it's only going to get, in my opinion, worse. So I would tell you.
What do you mean? The job market's been great the last couple of months with everything going on.
Yeah. And even if they don't have a job, I'm strictly saying, will they actually apply to get a job? There's a lot of that too. People that actually don't want to come back there are making more money, but that's a whole different topic. So I think that's such a good point, Mike. I would tell you though, I do think there's a lot of investors that listen to this that do want to scale. And I would tell you, if you want to scale during a tough market like this, that's your answer. Build a team. Like build a team. Like, and I've been working on this for 2 years, so I don't want to under exaggerate that, but we've been really ramping up for 2 years because we knew labor would be tough. I mean, we went literally from a 5-person team to right now a 55-person team over the last 2 years. And it's crazy. So we do try to reposition properties turn units in 48 hours or less, for example, because to Mike's point, like having the licensed plumber, having the contractor, we have 6 teams of 3 every single day, CapEx teams, 6 teams of 3, 3 in the north, 3 in the south, 2 people that lead them. Like I don't want to under exaggerate just how much work goes into repositioning these properties. So you got to have that set up. And repositioning it fast, that's the key right there. So, I mean, we can go as deep as, or answer any questions that you have, Mike, but I would tell you the short answer of how we reposition fast is we have some really great 1099 contractors. They do awesome work for us. And that gives us some flexibility. We divide up our, 1200 units, half in the north and half in the south. So if you have properties as Rand does in different areas, you create teams, capital improvement teams, flip teams, right? And for us, we have the labor where we can do 90% of it in-house. Yeah. So, we can rather quickly turn units. Our expectations to turn them in 48 hours. So we can go in there and we can do everything from top down, walls, everything. And we have three teams going 24/7. So, and then we have three teams in the south going 24/7. And that has allowed us to be able to reposition these properties faster. I would also tell you the second key to really think about is before you acquire a property, you got to really do a good job, not just underwriting the deal, but underwriting the repositioning process and how much is it going to cost? And then how fast can you move? And I would tell you there's two things, two variables. I'm going to tell you the easy one first that most people get. Number one is it's pretty easy. You can make some mistakes, but if you have a template or whatever, to assess how much reposition the property is going to cost, right? You go in there, you can even hire somebody and you could be like, okay, it's going to cost $10,000, $20,000 a unit, whatever. We're going to redo all the siding, windows, whatever. So, okay, whatever that comes out to, let's say it comes out to $250,000. Here's what most people don't get is when they start thinking about how long it's going to take, and I think you were leading into this, they don't factor in people. And I'd actually tell you, the hardest thing to do reposition their property is not to spend the $250,000 the smart way. That's hard. But the harder thing to do is figuring out how you communicate, like how you work with people on what you're doing. Because I mean, my mission is to improve people's lives. It's not to make people homeless. It's not to why we're repositioning really quickly an apartment to have a ton of people hating my management company. Like we want to go in there. We want to truly add value. So I think really thinking about if you don't have your own management company, then in thinking about how you would expect your management company to communicate with the people that are currently living there, because some of them absolutely do. And I would tell you in my experience, most of them want the upgraded apartment and are actually willing to pay for it. Some of them don't. And I think it's very important that you understand how long that takes. You understand how long it should take, right? There's a give and take piece of that. And we're really good at that. We're really good. We actually have, we continue to hire we call them an engagement specialist, where their role is really about how they drive not only retention, but when we take over an apartment, how do we really help them understand like our brand and what we're trying to do? Because a lot of people don't, I mean, in property management, I guess, I mean, most of your listeners know this, but there's a lot of bad property management companies. So I think rightfully so, most residents, tenants probably have a negative condensation towards a property management company. And I think if you really slow down and take the time to communicate what you're trying to do, the culture you're trying to change, the brand you're trying to build, what you're trying to do for them, I think that goes a long ways, but I don't think we do that very often. We're so asphyxiated on, reposition the property as fast as possible and, getting the tenant out, getting the new tenant in. Well, I mean, I would tell you there's a lot of times where we can keep the tenant and we can still, we can still reposition or rehab either the units around it. I mean, it's not a good strategy to kick out if you buy a 50 unit apartment, kick up 40 of the 50 of them and reposition 40 at the same time. I mean, it might be easier. Like this is where I think it really gets interesting. Is it easier to hire a 1099 contractor, have 40 empty apartments and have them go from one to other? Yup. Is it better for cash flow? no.
And the aesthetics of just like the branding behind it is like, oh, we kicked out 40 people to turn them and now charge double the rent.
Yeah. who are you really doing that for, right?
Yeah.
Is it for you or is it for the, yeah. So, and that's the rub, right? And that's why most repositioning processes take 36 months is because, you know, investors understand that. So when they're repositioning, it's hard to find the labor, it's hard to find the materials. And then obviously you're dealing with real people as you're repositioning, which can take time. So yeah. we can more quickly do it. Cause I just think the easiest way to put it is we're able to have the conversations you know, that lead to us being able to reposition this faster. And obviously, like I said before, we have the team in-house ready to go. I mean, we have the plan. We usually have three strategy sessions before we even take over the property. Day one, I shared this on the last podcast. I mean, we have at least 70 to 80% of our entire company on the property. We call it the immediate impact, right? We're trying to meet as many tenants as we possibly can. We're doing things that the tenants are going to see, whether that's landscaping, painting doors. We have the signing company already there. If we need a new roof, the roofing company's already there. Like day one, we just want them to feel that this is going to be a different kind of experience. Yeah. And that really helps set the tone too.
Yeah. The signage is like, people like look at it as like a line item, but it is such a great rebranding piece to be like, we're here. And it's like a delineation of no more of the old stuff. So I couldn't agree more. And one thing I think it's a key point, very critical. I think as an entrepreneur, especially in the real estate, one thing you hit on is you have 1,100 units. You went from 5 to 55 units. And I think every person who's on this is like, how does he scale? But more importantly, you have to realize that you have to invest in your business like you do these properties. So if you just think I'm going to be like, man, 3 years, Lamborghini, this and that, like it's not going to happen, because the more you grow, the more you're going to have to put back in. And it's not like the sexy answer that I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh man, Logan is just sitting on a ton of cash because he has all these properties. Logan has put, not many property management companies have an engagement specialist. So it's, you're constantly investing to make sure that you grow into it. Like I tell a lot of students in the Jake and Gita community, set up your system so that it's 3 years down the road, not tomorrow, because then you're going to have to spend the time to stop lost and go to the next platform. Or whether, like if you're using QuickBooks and then you go to Buildium, then you go to AppFolio, it's just like, you could have just skipped it. Yeah, it's more costly, but if you know you're going to get there, just invest in that system now. And I'm sure that's same with the people. I know I'm going to have this many units. I'm going to have a ton of turns. Why would I 1099 it when I can hire good people now and train them, get the culture, get the buy-in, and have that machine humming? And I think that's a testament to what you're doing.
Yeah, Mike, I think that's a good point. It's what I've really learned is that the investments that are usually the hardest to measure are the ones that give you the biggest ROI. And maybe that's why, for example, when we went from 5 employees to 55 in the last couple of years, like it's hard to measure the impact that's having, right? Or like this year, I think, you know, we're somewhere around, I think we've hired 24 people in the first 6 months of this year. We've lost 2 in property management. That's
absurd. That is, yeah, absurd.
So it's like, you know, I mean, we got people that have been with the company 6 months training somebody that's, you know, I just want to, you know, reiterate what you said, because we don't have enough time to talk about just how hard it is to train when you are scaling at that much. But I, you know, and it's why I said when you asked this large question, because I could go and like, we literally have like almost 30 different steps to reposition our property fast. But the two I mentioned, having a good plan around capital expenditures and then having a really good plan for how to communicate with just the people piece of it, right? The people piece is harder and it's harder to measure, right? So those are the things. I just love what you said, because when you're growing a business, I mean, I do. The most questions that I get is, rightfully so, is how did you scale, or how do I scale now? And that's the hard part. If you want to scale, it's the things that you can't measure that you got to start investing in. And I would also tell you that this is probably the most frustrating piece, and probably some of the biggest mistakes that I make. I always think that's good. I love sharing my mistakes too, because I feel like I get.
Wait, all you're not perfect.
is what you said about thinking 3 years out. I mean, when we were scaling over the last couple of years, I mean, the guy that runs my property management company, like he would tell you right away, is I love building systems. I love building operating procedures. And I'll tell you, like, you know, we would build them and I'd be like, okay, this should be good for about a year or two. Okay, broke in 6 months. So we got to redo it again, which is tough because especially if you're growing your people side, training people on new operating procedures, I mean, they're not efficient until 6 months of doing the same thing. So if you're constantly changing your operating procedures like we were doing, it is really tough. Luckily, we hire some good people and they're super smart and capable, but like it is, we would be so much more efficient. And that's what we're trying to do right now. Honestly, that's my biggest pain points is I got another two, like I said, 230 units coming online in the next 30 days. Like that is going to cause some inflection, right? That's 3 million of gross rents. That's going to change some things. So what we're trying to get better at is like, where do we see ourselves in the next, like you said, 3 or even like 5, 7 years? And if we're going to build an operating procedure, if we're going to train somebody, how does this operating procedure help us drive results today, but very, very easy, clear path towards for us, actually, we think we can be in the next 6, 7 years at 10,000 units. So we want to be at $1 billion worth of real estate in the next 7 years. And so everything that we're trying to build out right now is helps us manage the 1100 units right now. But like, how do we very easily, last time I was on this podcast, we had one team in the South and one team in the North, right? Actually, we didn't even have a North. so we're like, okay, so this is easy. We can't have this one team going all over. It's not efficient. They're driving all over the place. So like, let's have a North and a South. So now we have another team. All right. Now we bought more. So now it's really easy. Let's add another team. And then eventually we won't have a North and a South. We're going to have us by city, right? Because we're in 10 different cities. So instead of having North and a South, we're going to be in like Appleton. We're going to be in Green Bay. So we'll have teams in city. So I'm trying to say is like, it's very easy for us for repositioning properties now is because we have the system, but that system is very easy because we're thinking 7 years out, very easy to adapt all the way to 10,000 units if we get there.
So Logan, two books come to mind in all of your speaking, Traction and Who Not How. So if you want to be like Logan, read those two books. Is that pretty accurate?
That is very accurate.
With a sprinkle of Ray Dalio principles, because I think, Logan, you take so much pride in the machine and how it's performing. You as an entrepreneur and a leader, obviously I'm not in your business, but I can just tell by looking at you're so results oriented, but also understand that people component that you're literally going, okay, we built this machine and it produced X. Well, we needed it to produce Z. So how do we tweak it over and over and over again? And I think thinking like an engineer, and I mean, you have a very deep seated roots in ops, but I think as an entrepreneur, I think a lot of people are like, oh, why would I pay a VA $300 to make a slideshow? Or why would I do this? I can do that. And then you're just underwater, like, oh my God, I don't even know where I am. And so I think, and with eMyth as well, but I think you as an entrepreneur, you're building that machine, tinkering and tinkering and tinkering and looking at the result. And you're like, this isn't what I want. How do we make it better? How do we make it better? And you have, now you've scaled to have leaders work on that and tinker with you. But you as a visionary point and going, let's go that way. And let's build that. So it's amazing to see you just kind of hear it. Obviously, like I said, not in it, but hearing it, you can tell that your organization, that's how it operates.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was actually, someone asked me the other day, my mentor, if I could name like, what is the one thing that you would give advice to somebody else to, if you could only pick one thing between those that can scale and those that can't. And so I thought it was a really powerful question because there's a lot that goes into scaling, right? And
asked you that question. So I'm glad you asked it to yourself.
I thought about it a lot. And I think the single biggest difference is the people that scale is how they spend their time versus the people that don't scale.
Yep. Yeah. And it's hard, right? Because if you're like a one man band, it's not easy, but it's having that vision tracker of like, we need to go this way. And I mean, I'm guilty of it, of I can do this really quick. Even right now, we were talking before trying to get to close. Like I got to tweak some docs and get it signed. But Yeah, it's that mantra that you have. I mean, mine this year was by any means necessary. So for me, it's probably, yeah, a lot of times it's grit, me forcing it through. But I see your story, and it's just been truly remarkable, and even the friendship that we had. So it's been great to learn from you and just, you know, bounce ideas off of you. So just, you know, keep doing what you're doing, Logan, because you're a true inspiration to a lot of investors out there.
I appreciate that, Mike. And likewise, been a lot of fun building this relationship too. And you're right. I love the grit too, because I think it's not just like how you spend your time. It's like, I think the best leaders or the best people that, you know, think about how to build a business or real estate understand like that you probably should jump in the beginning, but then figuring out when it's right to jump out. Like, I mean, when I started our management company, I did leasing for a while. Like, I was a leasing agent. So I think it's really tough to determine when should you jump in. And I'm a big believer in jumping in, right? It's one of the reasons I love Gary V, because he's a big component of do the work, right? Like, and that's what you're saying too, right?
Yeah.
And then I think like, obviously he's been able to scale too. So I think it's just like that. It's one of the things, like my favorite thing on Sunday, is I just think about, now I just don't, I used to just pre-plan my next week, and now I think about how, you know, before I pre-plan my next week, I think about where I spent my time the previous week. And I am yet to go a week where I'm not like, that was pretty dumb. like I keep doing that, and I probably shouldn't be doing that. I know how to do it. I'm just trying to drive a result when really I should be developing a person to drive that result. And so that's what we're talking about right here is like so good for people to understand as they're scaling too.
Absolutely. No, that's who, not how, all the way. And as I build my son, I'm working on it myself, just building that Sunday routine of reflecting on planning the next week. But that's a good point of looking at the week before of how could I have done it differently. And even if you don't have someone, like that's why I build Asana, because eventually as you grow and scale, you're going to get names off and have people sub in. And the perfect example is like we lost a team member today, but hey, guess what? We have a new person. There it is. They have all the how to do it right there. So it's just a very powerful system. So build a machine and do less, do less so you can do more. But when was that inflection point for you getting out of the leasing and the property management and kind of focusing on the who? Because I think that's an important piece that someone right now is just like listening to set three. I'm going, oh my God, I'm never getting out of this. What's that light at the end of the tunnel for you that was like, oh, I can jump out of this?
Yeah. So listen, I think it's still going on. Like I want to just be honest. Like I still feel like I spend more time doing things that I shouldn't, but I have gotten better about building it. Right. I'm not doing leasing anymore. I haven't done that in years, but like, I mean, it's very, you don't have to do it all at once. I guess that's the easiest thing to say. Like before I was doing leasing, I was, you know, we had a like two or three person crew a couple years ago, and me and my president were going in there inspecting, even helping paint. I mean, I remember, you know, on a weekend going in there and helping turn a unit. And then obviously I worked myself out of that, then with leasing and so on and so forth. And I would just tell you that I'm able to do it where we're currently at. And what I think is really hard, or what I want to try to get better at, I quite honestly, I spend a lot of my time developing and strategizing mostly for my company now, but still when we grow, here's something that I think, I didn't quite realize, because I worked for a Fortune 50 company, and like most of the systems were already built. And I thought it was crazy when we were doing like a 8 to 10% comp, right? 8 to 10% growth. So doing a, you know, 240% growth is just like, it's like nothing I've ever experienced before. And what I realized is you get to a point, and as a leader, you develop the systems, you develop the machine, as you would put, and you gotta, once you grow again, it's like you find this comfortable spot. Everything's working really, really good at 1,000 units. But like in 3 months, we're going from 1,000 to 1,500. So it's like what was working really good and what you were doing works. But now if you didn't hire the right person, train the right person, adjust the machine quick enough, you find yourself. And that's why I said it's still constant. Now, do I need to adjust the machine where I'm, you know, going all the way back to turning a unit? Of course not. you know, you got different layers. But I also want to be, I pride myself on being transparent. Like I think if you really want to grow and you really want to scale, like one of the things that I'm constantly trying to get better at and that you will have to realize is, you know, it feels good to grow, but you should know that with growth, with more wealth, with more money, with more your business, there's going to come more problems. And I think if you don't want those problems, if you don't want to figure out how to grow yourself, don't grow. Like those challenges are super frustrating, but it's also like literally my favorite thing that I do now is like, okay, a new challenge. Like where the hell did this come from? Like this wasn't a challenge. Like we're all, that's right. Like we just added 300 units. So it wasn't a problem before. Anyway, like that's what I would say. I think the biggest inflection point we had as a company though, like to answer your question, was probably somewhere around like going from the 700 to crossing over to 1,000 units. It really, I mean, I feel like we went from an office staff of like 4 to 14 rather quickly. And I think that was great. Like I just noticed that my president was doing a lot of stuff. Even our directors in our company are still doing a lot of execution based stuff versus leading. And I think that's what we're currently working on right now. How do we help these guys develop their teams and the, you know, the leaders in the company spend more time on strategizing and developing so we don't get stuck.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think even my wheels are spinning of like, okay, like my underwriting tool is like, I literally underwrite it and print, I can print an LOI from that. So now I'm thinking of like 10X, 100X of how to do the acquisitions and the investor relations. And I think I resonated with like the growth plan of like doing the, I'm working on a 36 unit that we've talked about. And it's just like, you inherit those problems because lawyers, insurance, everyone is looking to you for the answers. And like right now it can easily just, you know, pack it up and be like, well, this sucks. But it's just taking those learning lessons and growing from it. So it's, I tell everyone, you never know what's going to happen, but a week before close, something always happens no matter what. So just you, and that's where I was laughing. Cause like going into last Friday, I was like, man, nothing bad has happened, but I know it's going to happen in the next like five. So every day that went by, I was just like, oh no, here it comes. Here it comes. I don't know where, but bam. So
if it happens a week before close, you're actually lucky. It's like 2 days before close.
Oh yeah. Well, it ended up being 2 days before close. So, yeah. But it's like you said, it's those inflection points and those are the pain plus reflection equals growth, as we Ray Dalio says. So, but awesome, Logan. Thank you so much for being on. What is your one investor pro tip? I know we gave a lot, but what is your one investor pro tip for our listeners out there?
Yeah, we did cover quite a bit. Let's stick with what you just said. I think like, instead of looking at what we're just talking about, I guess my biggest pro tip would be, we're talking about all these challenges, right? Stop looking at I think last year, for example, a lot of people looked at COVID as a challenge. And I think if you really want to scale and you understand business, because that's what real estate really is, right? You're just running, your apartments are businesses. Yep. If you understand that a challenge is actually an opportunity, you know, where it's going to take other people out of the game and allow you to, if you can overcome that opportunity, that challenge, be more successful, I think your mindset and what you do about it is going to be much, much stronger. And there's a lot of challenges. I don't want to, you know, in real estate specifically with COVID, but there's also like a lot of opportunity that could have allowed you. It certainly allowed me, to take other investors out or other people that weren't going to sell to sell. So if you can look at these challenges as an opportunity, I really, that would be my biggest pro tip, other than the way we started this podcast with like, you're not in real estate, you're in debt.
Celebrate debt. That's going to be the podcast. Managing debt and celebrate it. So Logan, thank you so much for being on, but also, like I said, your friendship is tremendous. And if anyone has any questions, how can they best reach out to you besides joining the Logan Rankin Instagram, Clubhouse, all the other content you're putting out this year? It's been a great growth. So how can they reach you?
Yeah, easiest way would be my Instagram at Logan Rankin. And then I do have a website for loganrankin.com as well too. So check it out. And if I can be of any help, I'd love to have that opportunity.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Logan. It means a lot for you being on, and I'm sure in 3 months we'll have you on again. And you're like, oh, that billion Google, we got it. We're done. So, but if anyone has questions for me, please reach out to me at MikeT@RanCRE.com. Until then, we will see you next week.
Thanks, Mike.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.